The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello. This is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, 1001 Hints and Tips from Breeders' Digest, from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Birds and Blooms magazine, the Triangle Gardener magazine, and maybe from Pantyhose, Hot Peppers, Tea Bags, and More for the Garden by Yankee Magazines. We'll start with Dave's Garden. The Slipper Orchids by Sharon Brown. They were small, strange blooms, looking very much like ballet shoes to me. We didn't gather many of them, and never the flower. We waited until it had bloomed and the plant was drying, dying down before we gathered the root. It was to be made into a liquid that would ease the pain of a toothache. The first time I ever saw a real cultivated orchid was when I was a senior in high school, and my boyfriend gave me a corsage made of two pale mint green cymbidium orchids. Most girls got dyed carnations, and a few got roses, but I got orchids. I guess I never told him how special those orchids were to me, and it really would not have made much sense to him at the time, because he did not know Aunt Bet. But I will never forget those orchids. Aunt Bet and I had traveled every path up the mountains and made some new ones of our own, in search of one plant or another in the years before I went away to college. She knew a lot about the medicinal value of plants because she had learned it at the knees of her Native American grandmother. I was always ready to accompany her on another adventure, and one spring morning we went in search of what she called the wild orchids. Not known for my timidity, I immediately told her that no orchids grew in the mountains. They only grew in the warm climate of the islands. And whatever made her think we could find orchids in the mountains? I had just finished a fourth grade class in geography at the time, so I knew all about the islands. I think you're wrong, Aunt Bet. I bet we don't find one orchid. Aunt Bet gave me one of her looks and just kept right on climbing. She might have mumbled something, but I didn't hear it if she did. We got to the edge of a grove of evergreen trees. I don't remember what kind they were, but most likely they were cedar, since cedars grew in great abundance in the mountains around my house. Peeking out from beneath the evergreens, I could see a small mint green bloom, and there were many of them all clustered together beneath that cedar tree, much like baby chicks nestling under the feathered wings of the old mother hen. I stepped closer to see what it was, and truly it looked like miniature ballet shoes to me. Aunt Bet told me they were wild orchids, and that we were going to mark the plants so that we could dig up some roots later in the fall. She said she would make an infusion from the roots and use it to ease the pain of toothaches. We drove a stake, and I tied one of my hair ribbons to the top so that we could find the wild orchid in the fall. Aunt Bet had just introduced me to the lady slipper orchids. They are in the genus Cypripedium in the Orchidaceae family. There are about 50 species that are widespread throughout boreal, temperate, and tropical regions of the continents. More than 30 species are in the northern hemisphere, and 12 species occur in the United States. 11 of those are represented on national forest system lands. They are hardy terrestrial plants that can grow in cold climates and flower in early to mid-spring when there is plentiful moisture and cool temperatures. There are some that grow in Alaska that are so well adapted to cold, their shoots sprout up under the snow in the spring for centuries. Cypripedium species have been sought and collected not only for their unique beauty, but also for their medicinal trade. As a result of this and of the fact that ladies' slippers have special requirements that make them difficult to cultivate, they rarely survive transplanting. In many areas, and particularly on all federal lands, it is illegal to dig or pick the wild orchids simply because their numbers are dwindling. The genus name Cypripedium is derived from the Greek verbs cypris, an early reference to Aphrodite, and pedalon for sandal. This is because the fused petals that form the pouch resemble a slipper or a shoe, thus the name the slipper orchids, or lady slippers. The wild orchids have swollen ball-shaped tubers that were regarded in traditional practices as having medicinal value. The root of the lady slipper was used as remedy for tooth pain and also for nervousness. In order to survive and reproduce, most of the lady slippers interact with a fungus in the soil. Generally, orchids do not have food supplies in them like most plants. Some of them require a fungus to break open the seed and attach itself to the orchid. The fungus then passes on food and nutrients to the lady slipper. As it gets older, it produces its own nutrients, and the fungus will then extract nutrients from the orchid roots. This relationship between fungus and orchid is known as symbiosis. This is the main reason lady slipper orchids will not transplant easily. The soil must have the proper fungus in order for the orchid to grow. Under perfect conditions, the slipper orchid is a long-lived herbaceous perennial. It flowers from mid-April to late May. They range in color from white to yellow to pink and magenta, and quite often have a green or brown tint to them. They might take on a slightly different shape as you see them from place to place, but always they have the little cupped look of a slipper. Well, those are the usual questions I asked her about everything, and as I have told you, she was an extremely patient woman, but she answered in her own good, sweet time. This is what she told me, but not until we made an infusion from the flowers and one from the leaves. Cowslip is used for many an ailment. Long time ago, women thought it made them have a pretty complexion if they boiled the flowers in water and then rubbed that water on their faces. The juice from the flowers takes off spots and wrinkles. Some folks mix flowers with a little wine to wipe on their faces to make them fair in the eyes of men. Some folks eat the young leaves fresh off the plant like greens, and some folks cook them in soups. Sometimes they dry the leaves and the flowers and use them in place of tea to drink. She stopped talking for a bit, looked at me like she was thinking of things she wasn't sure she should tell me. So I said, "Aunt Bet, what else is it used for? 'Cause I want to know everything, just like you do, and if you don't tell me, I'm never going to know. So you might as well just go tell me everything about cowslips right now, 'cause if you don't, I'll just keep on asking you till you do tell me.' Well, child, it's like this. Fresh gathered blossoms infused in boiling water and simmered down with a little sugar or honey makes a fine yellow syrup. When you take it with a little water, it's good for settling the nerves and for calming children down. If you boil the powdered roots in ale, then mix a little water in it, you can give it to a giddy child who won't stop talking and who won't rest till she knows everything she wants to know. It's just something that some folk give to children so they can get a little rest, that's all. But we aren't going to have to do that now, are we? Well, I was afraid to say a word, and I was smart enough to keep my mouth shut for a little while. I even helped her dry some of the leaves and blossoms, and later I helped her make an infusion for giddy children. I knew all the time she wasn't talking about me, but I wasn't going to take any chances. I am more familiar with Kentucky's Lady Slipper. It is a large, showy orchid with about 28-inch stems. The stems have 5 leaves and bear a single flower. The pouch of the flower is creamy to pale yellow with a greenish-purple petal. It grows in southern hardwood forests on damp, low-lying areas near springs or mountain creeks. It is often found where wild ferns grow. The name of the Kentucky Lady Slipper is Cypripedium kentuckiens. I can't begin to tell you how many times I had to climb that mountain and dig a few roots for Aunt Bet's toothache remedy. Sometimes she went with me, and sometimes I went alone. But always it was an hour-long trip to get only a few roots. I never had a toothache, so I didn't know what all the fuss was about. When I got back to her house with a little sack of fresh roots, it was my job to wash them, then pound them with a wooden mallet to get the juices flowing. As soon as I had pounded those poor roots to death, she would immediately dump them into a pot of boiling water, and there they would stay until she said they had been boiled enough. After all the boiling, the roots were strained from the liquid and mashed to get every drop of juice out. Then the juice was poured into little bottles that had cork stoppers. Whenever anybody came to her with a toothache, she would take one of the bottles and with a wooden-handled cotton swab, she dabbed that orchid root infusion onto the tooth that was giving a problem. Then she would hand the person with a toothache the bottle and about 6 of those swabs and send them on their merry way. I don't like dentists either, so maybe I can go out and find some Lady Slipper root just in case I ever get a toothache. There are many varieties of Lady Slipper orchids across our country. Chances are, if you have any woody areas near where you live, you will find them. And if you do, please let them stay where they are. These beautiful little Lady Slippers are dwindling in number, and only we can do something about that. And now from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Planning for Fall by Susan Littlefield. The summer harvest in full swing in August. Tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, corn, squash, and melons are ripening, giving us the fresh fixings for many a delicious summer meal. But the days get shorter and fall becomes on the way. Then it's time to think about planting to continue the harvest as the seasons change. Cool season harvest. There are lots of great choices when it comes to vegetables that do well as the weather cools in fall. These include lettuce and other hardy greens, spinach, kale, collards, leeks, cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and kohlrabi. But in order to reap a harvest before it gets too cold, you need to begin planning and planting in mid to late summer in many areas. The longer the frost-free season in your part of the country and the milder the winters, the more extended your fall harvest can be. But even gardeners in short-season northern areas can enjoy some fall pickings if they plan ahead. Giving your plants some protection from the cold is another way to extend the gardening season. Cold frames, fabric row covers, clutches, and low tunnels can all offer varying degrees of protection and extend the harvest well beyond that of the open garden. When to plant. Planting times for fall crops will depend on where in the country you garden. Gardeners in southern areas will be able to plant later and have a wider variety of crops to choose from than those whose garden where frost comes at the end of September or earlier. To figure out the best fall planting times for your garden, start with the average date of your first hard fall frost when temperatures dip to 28 degrees. Since most cool season crops can take a light frost without harm, then take the days to maturity for the crop you plan to grow and count back this number of days from the frost date. If the days to maturity listed is from transplant, not seedling, add another 4 weeks to this figure because plants grow more slowly in the shorter, cooler days of fall. Add a fall factor of another week or two to the maturity time. Then add in the length of the expected harvest period, and you've arrived at your planting day. As in an example, the days to maturity for black-seeded Simpson lettuce is 45 days. Add a 7-day fall factor and a 14-day harvest period for a total of 66 days. If your fall frost is around November 1, you'd need to plant your seeds by August 26. If you plan to offer your plants protection, you can plant 2 to 3 weeks later and still expect to have a good harvest. It may be too late in the season for many gardeners to plant crops like Brussels sprouts. While they are great for fall harvest, take a long time to mature, but it's never too soon to be planning for the next season. Tips for fall crops. Plant in succession. Plant fast-maturing crops such as lettuce, arugula, mustard, mesclun, and mash in succession. Plant a small planting every few weeks from midsummer on to enjoy a continued harvest through the fall. Gamble a little. Every season is different, and you never know when the really cold weather will hold off, giving you a longer harvest. If you're willing to push the envelope and make your last plantings a little later than recommended, you may be rewarded with an extra long harvest season some years. Invest in a fall cold frame. This is one of the handiest tools for extending your growing season. A cold frame can give you an extra month or more of growing time in the fall, not to mention a place to give plants an early start in spring. Mulch root crops. You can extend your harvest of beets, carrots, turnips, and parsnips by mulching over them in the ground before the ground freezes hard. Place a foot-deep layer of straw on top of the plants, extending out about 18 inches on either side of the row. Move the mulch aside to dig the roots as needed, then cover the plants back over. Even in northern areas, you can often continue your harvest up until early winter this way. Question of the month, how to preserve herbs. What's the best way to preserve the herbs from my garden? One of the easiest ways to preserve herbs such as chives, parsley, tarragon, and dill is to freeze them in ice cube trays. Chop the leaves of your favorite herbs, pack into the trays, cover with water, and freeze. Store cubes in plastic bags in the freezer and pop them into soups this winter. Drying is the traditional way to preserve many herbs. Make small bundles of herbs tied with twine and hang them upside down in a warm spot out of direct sun with good air circulation, or spread them out on a tray made of window screening. Dry plants until they are brittle and crumble easily. Plants to expand your blooming garden into fall by Steve Trusty. As the heat of summer starts to give way to cooler days and nights, it's time to think about getting the most out of the fall season that lies ahead. There are a number of plants that thrive in fall, depending on where you live. The time is here or fast approaching when you should start planning for extending the growing season. There are plants for show, edible plants, and some that do double duty that just might fit your design and taste. Here are a few I like. Pansies are one of the most popular cool season flowering plants. Available in many different colors and ranging in height from 4 to 8 inches. These tender perennials are usually grown in as annuals. In zone 7 and warmer, they often bloom well into winter. And here's a bonus. The flowers are edible and add a little color to food presentation and spice to the palate. Look for started plants at your favorite garden center. Ornamental kale and cabbage. There's a wide variety of selections in this group of cool weather loving plants. Usual height and spread is about 12 to 18 inches. Besides being colorful, they display different leaf shapes and forms. They are also edible if you like their cabbage flavor. Some are bred primarily for color without regard to taste, so I recommend trying a small amount to make sure you have a tasty one. In the Midwest, seeds can be sown in August and plants can be set outdoors from mid-August to September. Further north, you can start a little earlier. South gardeners should wait a little longer until the weather begins to moderate. Started plants are also widely available at garden centers in late summer and fall. Cool weather brings out the colors. In ornamental kales and cabbages, and these hardy plants often survive temperatures down into the single digits. In the south, they often overwinter and retain their color and charm until spring. And now from 1001 Hanson Tips by Reader's Digest. Squash. Native Americans. Squash are ancient indigenous food crops and comprise two distinct types. Summer squash are bushy plants with soft-skinned fruits. Winter squash grow on vines and have a hard rind. All squash like rich soil and plenty of sunshine. Prepare for planting by digging a hole large enough to hold a bushel of cow manure or compost. Dump it in and top off with 3 inches of good garden loam. Don't place where squash and its relatives have grown in the past year or so. Interplant with radishes or basil to repel borers and beetles. For best germination, sow seed when the soil's temperature is 60 degrees or above. If you've amended the soil with manure, do not add fertilizer during the growing season. If not, incorporate a 5-10-10 at planting time and side dress each plant when it starts to vine. And now from Yankee Magazine's Pantyhose, Hot Peppers, Tea Bags, and More for the Garden. Melons and More. Melon Protectors. Prevent your favorite melons, such as cantaloupes and honeydews, from rotting because of contact with the soil. Make a little cradle for them by cutting plastic milk jugs in half lengthwise. Punch a few holes in the bottom of each half for drainage. As the melons develop, set each into a cradle to keep them high, dry, and oh so perfect. The plastic cradles also discourage nibbling by rodents. If you don't want to go to the trouble of cutting up milk jugs, just grab some of those plastic container lids that are always losing their mates, or the plastic lids of coffee pans or oatmeal canisters. They'll help keep the melons off the ground as well, although they don't do much to deter pesky nibblers. One of the best ways to grow melons is on a trellis or other upright support. Keeping leaves high and dry prevents a plethora of diseases. The problem is that the melons grow heavy and tend to drag down or break off prematurely. To prevent this, pamper your melons with some old pantyhose. Cut off the legs and use them to form slings around the melons, securing them to the trellis until they're fully ripe and ready to be harvested. High and dry, leftover lattice or trellis plus sturdy PVC or metal pipe equals horizontal support for melons and pumpkins. Make legs for the support by starting with 4 T-shaped pipe fittings. and save the planet. Cute, not cluttered. When you're reusing things around the house, your veggie garden can get awfully cluttered and junky looking. All those steaks and furniture parts and pizza and pieces. Leftover house paint can come to the rescue. Paint all those odds and ends a single color, and suddenly they'll look decidedly more unified and intentional. The paint also will protect the items so they will last longer outdoors. Tomato trellis from trash. Everyone, it seems, has a favorite method for staking or caging tomatoes. All involve growing them vertically. If you have space, try something different. Take advantage of tomatoes' natural tendency to sprawl and grow them horizontally. Growing tomatoes this way spreads them out into a single layer, so harvesting them is a breeze. Create a horizontal support to keep the foliage and fruit off the ground, where disease and pests could have a heyday. Make several stakes about 18 inches high from scrap lumber and pound them into the ground. Then string strong twine back and forth to create a net. Or rummage around the house and garage for other suitable trellis materials. Slats of an old wooden crib or playpen, sections of old fencing, pieces of lumber laid crisscross. Set them atop stakes, or better yet, use some of the gallon paint cans that have nothing but a bit of dried up paint in them. They make amazingly sturdy legs. Cats love digging and doo-dooing in the freshly worked soil of a seed bed outdoors. Keep kitty off the bed by topping the area with a single layer of newspaper. Anchor the paper with stones. After a couple of days, remove the paper. The soil will have settled, making it less tempting to felines. A simple cage made of chicken wire and fabric will keep seedlings safe from sun scald, frost, bunnies, and other threats to their well-being. Until seedlings become established, they are vulnerable to everything from rabbits to frost to hot sun. To provide protection, create a special cage for your tender plants. Cut a large hole in the side of a jug opposite the handle and use it to hold cut flowers. That's using a milk jug. Run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have comment or questions, call 919-832-5138. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org. You can also give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. The North Carolina Reading Service. We breathe words into your life.